Welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. It's still January 3rd, 2023. And still waiting and hoping that Mr. Barrett will arrive here to lend a hand, but we'll proceed regardless. So what I was doing before the break was just sort of recounting some of the highlights of city council action and city manager initiatives and things during the past year. So by the time we were getting towards springtime in March, the biggest flashpoint of the time, and it was quite a flashpoint, was what was actually going to happen in the vicinity of Porter Square. Again, there were some of the requirements based on the cycling safety ordinance to put in separated bike lanes. It was also the MBTAs and the other transportation planning initiatives to put in dedicated bus lanes. And obviously when you put in dedicated bike lanes, dedicated bus lanes, you have to remove a lot of parking and maybe even reduce the number of travel lanes and do other big changes. And it became a very, very big, big issue, which actually also involves some removal of the catenary lines for the old trolleys after they had discontinued the use of the electrified buses. All right, so meeting after meeting after meeting, it was a lot of public comment having to do with not only Porter Square, but all of North Mass Ave. And let's not forget that the age of COVID was still very, very much upon us. And businesses were struggling, and there was a tremendous amount of outpouring from both residents and business owners who were concerned about their very survival. And you know, again, some people would try to dismiss it all and say, well, don't worry, everybody's just gonna go bicycling up there to do that. But in fact, I think most of that was fantasy. But there was some serious problems. And I think it's fair to say that it's largely still a lot. I mean, they did some modifications, but much of the situation remains unresolved, I think, until today. So in March, that was the Porter Square and North Mass Ave issue was big. And I think it also relates to this other sections of Mass Ave on the other side of Porter Square as well. Those board appointments that had been made the prior month just sat there without action, you know, while the, as Johnny Most used to say, while the city councilors fiddled and diddled. There was also something which is significant then, which continues to this day as a rather significant and not yet resolved matter, where there was a so-called Budo ordinance, really, where basically it was when it was first adopted a few years back, it was a matter of building use energy or building energy use disclosure ordinance. It was really a requirement that buildings above a certain size simply disclose their energy uses as sort of, you know, so people would get a better handle on energy use and possible improvements. But as we rolled into 2022, this became not so much all about disclosure as much it was about mandates to change systems in buildings, which as we, you know, it wasn't just lab buildings or institutional buildings, it were even residential buildings over a certain size. So eventually condominium owners came to realize that they might actually be hit with a requirement to retrofit their buildings at significant expense based on possible city council action. So that got batted around. It's still being battled around, except now I think the where it stands is they at least formally passed to a second reading the proposed Budo amendments. Really, they should change the name of it from disclosure ordinance to something more appropriate to something which is now a mandate for retrofits. So it really should be like building retrofit mandatory ordinance or something of that sort. But as I say, that's that may actually be acted upon at the very next city council meeting six days from now. But there also were, by year's end, there were some requests for more information about the impacts of the proposed ordinance as well. So the bike lane controversies continued, to be sure. There were also some initiatives having to do with the possibility of allowing, basically obliterating the exclusive single family zoning districts of the city. You know, not necessarily changing them radically, but allowing for multifamily use in those districts. I'm not so sure that that one's actually yet resolved. It was more that the planning board had proposals, there were city councilors had proposals, and I may be spacing out a little bit, but I don't know that that's a completely settled matter just yet, right? By the time we rolled around into May, as is always the case in May, it was time for the annual budget, the fiscal year 2023 budget. And what was perhaps most significant in that budget, other than the fact that, you know, there were the usual increases of 7-point-something%, basically faster than inflation, though inflation seems to be catching up these days. But in response to some of the desires expressed by city councilors going back to 2020, there was a proposal to create a new community safety department in addition to the police department. This was in response to desires to have non-uniform police response to certain calls. This is not really settled even yet, I might add, but a department was created and funded within the annual budget. And in it, you know, there had been a group of advocates proposing something that they referred to as the HEART proposal. Holistic emergency something or other response team, I think. The city responded by creating something, a procedure they called CARP. And that was not well received by the advocates because they felt that they were somehow being usurped. And then when there were these so-called ARPA funds, federal funds with no strings attached, were made available or going to be made available for various uses. Just using city tax revenue to support an outside organization, which is what the HEART people were about, that wasn't really legal. They were going to do things in-house, but I think as the year ended, it appeared that our new city manager was actually on the verge of actually funding this outside entity, even though there were tremendous numbers of serious questions left unanswered. I think personally, this is going to be one of the greatest tests of our city manager to see if he actually follows through with that revision from what was recently being discussed in that regard. But anyway, there was a lot of this federal money with no strings attached was then spread around to various other purposes around the city, including some direct benefit to individuals. For a period of 2 years that'll probably be ending right around the time of the next municipal election. So we'll see how well that goes, right? Now by late May, after the budget hearings, the city council had decided to appoint Joseph McCann as the new city auditor and Diane LeBlanc as the new city clerk. Joseph McCann had already been working in the city, so that was a pretty fast transition. There was a period of time before Diane LeBlanc took over as new city clerk where they actually appointed Paula Crane as the interim clerk. And then only in the summertime did that transition fully take place. It was also around this time in late May, according to the schedule laid out by the Government Operations Committee, that an ad hoc committee, this is something worth discussing in future weeks, I think, but an ad hoc committee to decide on, to do some screening of the city manager applicants to settle down. They eventually settled down to four finalists who were Iram Farouk, Cheryl Fisher, Yian Huang, and Norman Kamalo. And soon thereafter, Yian Huang was actually chosen as city manager. It was around this time that they also ordained the changes to the alewife area, made it a moratorium, basically kicking the can down the road for a year. The Government Operations Committee was coming up with some guidelines for how to do board appointments or what they were going to do with board appointments. But it was actually on June 6th officially that our new city manager, Ian Huang, was selected, and Owen O'Riordan was made interim city manager, later to become deputy city manager. There was an ad hoc, it doesn't sit well with me to this day, the mayor appointed an ad hoc committee of four city councilors to select the Charter Review Committee, which turned out to be a 15-member body. I was one of the applicants, by the way. I want to do in full disclosure, but I was not selected. The fact that that was actually done as an ad hoc committee of four city councilors, remember, the city councilors do not, under the planning charter or even the revised planning charter, have appointing authority. They can't do it, but they did it. They do have review authority over city manager appointments, but in fact, because they didn't want to go run afoul of the open meeting law, they simply appointed four people to basically just get together in a room and pick 15 people who were going to be charged with the rather significant job of reviewing and making recommendations for possible changes to the very form of government, as well as the form of elections that we use in this city. I'll stand by my point of view that in fact this was not properly done, which is not to be critical of the 15 individuals involved, but I think it was done dead wrong. So by June, mid-year, the expense for some of the schools had ballooned. So they requested yet another $49 million for the work on the Tobin, or the, forget actually what the new name of that's called, the street is called, the new name of the upper school up there. So that's a significant amount, in the hundreds of millions of dollars now. The city, in its unquenchable thirst for new property, also did a friendly taking of 689 Mass Ave, as we like to call it, in Central Square, call it the Citizens Bank Building, that may one day be used, for example, for the community safety department that was created. There's a lot of desires among city councilors for more and more space. So who knows whether that will end up in there, but that'll be a process. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. June 27th was the very last meeting of outgoing city manager Louis DePasquale. So that was a significant moment in the history of the city. He'd worked for the city for many, many years. By the mid-summer meeting in August 1st, it was the one and only one where Owen O'Riordan was acting as city manager. The new city manager hadn't yet taken over, but that brought an annual report on the affordable housing overlay, which I think led to some other repercussions down the road. There was a lot of controversy out of proposed Brattle Street bike lanes, as well as announcements about the charter review appointments. Our new city manager didn't take over until the first fall meeting in September 12th. Interesting meeting, but another, I guess, somewhat related or similar to the notion about eliminating single family zoning in favor of allowing multifamily housing everywhere. It was also a kind of a proposal that's sort of part of this national movement to eliminate parking minimums, so that if you built a new building prior, pretty much all citywide, that it normally you'd say, well, if you're going to have an impact here and you're going to have people commuting to this property, if it was a commercial property, normally you'd be required to actually have a certain amount of parking made available. So that was just eliminated right across the board. A lot of us were supportive of eliminating some parking minimums, but not necessarily across the board. But such is the way movements operate. They just sweep through like a river. And we'll have to wait and see over the next few years what the repercussions of that. Late summer was also where we lost our good friend Peter Valentine, one of our fixtures of Central Square, and Ellie Arden, who was one of our regulars who would come to City Hall with very thoughtful commentary. That was also when the PFAS matter about the water system first arrived, and eventually we went off of our own Cambridge water for a period of months in order to rectify the situation successfully. September also brought the first proposal to ban laboratories except in a few industrial districts. So for example, Central Square, they would ban labs of all sorts. But I don't think that the proponents really thought that through very well. Eventually that proposal was referred to committees. So I think it was specifically the Neighborhood Long-Term Planning and Economic Development Committee to think it through a little bit more carefully. One councillor, Councillor Zondervan, had objections to the fact that this was being tabled and set aside to be thought out better. And he was then involved in creating an alternative citizens petition, which essentially was the same petition, to basically thumb his nose at his colleagues in order to make it so that it had to be referred to the planning board and ordinance committee for hearing and report. You know, so basically the clock is now ticking as a result. But again, I think wiser heads may prevail on this one eventually, but we'll just have to see how that plays out. Another rather significant thing that was taking place throughout all of this was a rather significant increase in the so-called incentive zoning payments. So when new development occurs, there would be you pay a certain amount of money per square foot of new development because of the potential impacts. Typically, the money would then be going into something like the Affordable Housing Trust. So there were some changes made, some floors established, as to when these new provisions would kick in. It was very controversial, but they eventually did settle on a significant increase with some other revisions. Meanwhile, the bike lanes continued as they do to this day, including controversies over Garden Street, where they, in order to put in the bike lanes in both directions, they made a portion of Garden Street one way. Well, that led to hundreds and hundreds of letters and public commentary about all the cut-through traffic that was generated as a result of this reconfiguration of the roads. Again, if there was a traffic board had been in place all along, the appropriate questions and analysis would likely have taken place, but that was not the case. So basically our traffic department, which has expertise to some degree and does not anticipate as well as they should in many other ways, now they're dealing with some of the fallout from that. Of course, people being people will eventually adapt, and maybe the entire matter will resolve itself, but there are some potential changes pending, and we'll see exactly how that goes. Something that happened a little bit later in the year, actually in November 21st, was really a kind of an explosive potential controversy, which is there were four city councilors introduced what would be what I would call an ABC inspired, ABC referring to what they call a better Cambridge, but I've always referred to them as a bigger Cambridge all they want is more density, more height, no questions asked in all circumstances, everywhere, without any question, right? So there were four councilors introduced a proposal that would have allowed 25-story buildings in some places along corridors, such as even where I live on Broadway, which typically is we have some apartment buildings that can be 5 or 6 stories tall, but we also have a lot of, you know, 35 foot tall buildings. They wanted to just say, as long as it was subsidized housing, you could, as of right, without any question, just drop 13 story buildings in anywhere along there. That it was a lot of pushback about that, but it was simply referred to the Housing and Neighborhood Long-Term Planning Committee for further discussion. We'll have to see what 2023 brings, whether that proposal, which to many of us was just outrageous, actually shows up again in the same form, or whether it gets revised, or maybe it just gets dropped. We'll see. You know, that's one of the things that this coming year will bring for us. As I mentioned earlier, the so-called BUDO amendments, you know, Building Energy Use Disclosure Ordinance, which again, I would emphasize really should be called Building Retrofit Mandate Ordinance, is still subject to review. And there may be some action at this coming Monday's meeting, but it's still alive and kicking, and we'll see where it really goes. Mid-December, as I mentioned at the very beginning of the last half hour, was also brought the death of Sheila Russell, former mayor and good friend Sheila Russell. There were updates on the charter review process. Again, I think the update was somewhat false, but you know, on the bright side, the subsequent meetings do seem to be getting a little bit more substantial, and we'll see where that goes. I think this is bound to be a topic of some significant discussion for the year 2023. I don't see any way around it. Of course, 2023 is also a municipal election year. So sure, there will be, again, just in terms of the charter change question, the way the process is to work is they are supposed to come up with a report by late June, I think June 30th, and then the city council is then to review it, and they effectively can say, sure, let's do this. Well, at least let's put it on the ballot to let the voters decide to do it. Or they could reject it, or they could just change it. They can pretty much make it up if they wanted to, which is, to me, a flaw in the process. I mean, if you're going to actually have a real process, then it ought to be a real process and not just sort of a quiet suggestion to some city councilors who might then choose only to cherry pick those parts of the ideas that are presented that might benefit them politically. You know, such as extended terms, fewer elections to the accountable for, or giving additional power to city councilors, which is currently prohibited for good reason under the current planning charter. But it's an election year also means that we will likely see some new candidates and some older candidates. So will there be any current incumbent councilors who will exit, choose not to seek re-election, or as some of us have speculated, perhaps take a job in the new Healy-Driscoll administration? That's a possibility. And there's some precedent for things like that happening over the years. So possible exits. I mean, so far nobody's really suggested any exits, so none anticipated. The last municipal election in 2021 brought some interesting new faces as possible continuing candidates. I know of at least two of them who are planning to be candidates for 2023, and we'll see how that goes. Will there be some new faces who we have not yet heard of who will file with the state and start raising money and doing that? As of December 31st, nobody had yet filed with the state so that they could start doing fundraising. All right. What happens as the year unfolds? It's not just about the elections, right? It could be you know, that'll be a significant part of it, is just people's re-elections. Will we do the same story as we often do, where we have such a lack of qualified and interesting new candidates that in fact we just have 9 incumbents just get reelected, which, you know, some, they would probably claim that as a mandate, but I would claim it as sort of just a sad commentary on the inability of our local elections, state elections, even national elections to actually attract good candidates, right? So you basically, you just get a continuation of what is. I mean, we all love recycling, but it does come a point where replacement of and getting some rejuvenation is an advisable course of action. So we'll see what the year brings. Will there be new issues that we haven't yet anticipated? How will the matter of this proposal for the community safety department shake out? You know, will the what I like to think of as the patronage proposal that is known as the HART proposal actually be funded? And if so, will that prove to be an embarrassment for the city, if not a legal liability for the city, to have unqualified people basically being involved in dealing with emergencies and domestic calls? We'll see. I think there's some dangerous paths that we may be following if things head down that road, right? How will inflation nationally affect the city's ability to carry out plans? Will the tax burden on residents actually start shifting so that in fact we can't just always rely on the commercial base to fund anything and everything? You know, I think we may be getting dangerously close to the point where in fact residents actually have to start thinking about residential tax burdens. So anyway, just a few thoughts, and I guess we'll try and do this again, hopefully with Patrick or someone else, in a couple of weeks on Cambridge Inside Out.